and welcome to a special edition of the Saraline Soccer Podcast. I'm Jay Hibbs.
And I'm Robert Jonas.
And it's a special edition because it's not really part of our regular podcasting schedule. And it's also special because we had the opportunity to talk with New York Times soccer reporter Jack Bell.
Yeah, it's always nice to have Jack on the show. He's been on the show a couple times last season. You know, not only does he know a lot about the Red Bulls, which I think our fans will be happy about, but you know, he's been covering soccer for a long time now and can tell us a little bit about MLS, international players, you name it. And I think in our conversation, we'll touch on all of that.
That's right. It's a wide-ranging conversation, and I think one that our listeners will enjoy. So perhaps we should just jump right to it.
I think that's a great idea.
And joining us for a special Centerline Soccer Podcast is Jack Bell of the New York Times. Welcome to the podcast, Jack.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
I am doing well, Mr. Jonas.
Doing fantastic, and thanks so much for being on the show with us this morning, Jack. You know, we have the San Jose Earthquakes visiting Red Bull Arena, site of a very famous victory for the San Jose Earthquakes in last season's playoffs. Talk about what's gone on with the New York Red Bulls in the beginning of this season. You know, what happened since the fallout from that playoff loss?
Well, they made over their roster to a large degree. There were at least a half a dozen retirements. They let Juan Pablo Angel. They did not exercise his option, so he went to Los Angeles. Of course, you have Thierry Henry and Rafa Marquez in a full season. They acquired Jan Gunnar Solli and a gent named Timu Tanio. And, of course, the big news most recently is the acquisition of Dwayne Di Rosario from Toronto for two young players, Tony Chani and Danley Borman. So it's a bit of a makeover, but with much of the same core from last season, and they've started relatively slowly this season, as anybody can see from looking at the standings or having watched you know, a couple of their games. They've only scored two goals in four games. They've really monopolized possession in most of those games, but have very little to show for it. And right now it looks like Thierry Henry might miss Saturday's game with another injury in an Achilles problem.
You know, I wanted to follow up on that. You know, I noticed that too, watching New York. They're really dominating possession. It seems that Hans Bach has really brought that style in. He wants to see his players holding on to the ball. And that's something, you know, the Earthquakes have been trying to do a little bit as well, you know, keeping the ball more and looking for their options from that. But in both cases, neither team is really getting or finishing their scoring opportunities. Is that really all that needs to happen for the teams to make the next step? Or is it just, you know, something up top that's not quite working for them?
Well, you know, Robert, it's one of the great mysteries. You know, one of the tried and true statistics, such as they are in soccer, are time of possession. And normally the team that has the ball controls the game. And, yes, they do control the game. But, well, for example, against Philadelphia, it was one bad mistake in the back that led to Philadelphia's goal. But that said, you still need to take your chances. And, you know, as we all know, in this game, If you don't exploit your opportunities when they're there, it always comes back to bite you in some way, and it has come back to bite them. You know, that said, 2 weeks ago, Houston came to town and played the Red Bulls, and you know, everybody was saying how poorly the Red Bulls played in the first half, and I think that's true, but really what's forgotten so many times is the other team's strategy, and you know, Dominic Kinnear is a hell of a coach, and I think there are certain coaches and certain teams that are comfortable playing against teams that try to hold on to the ball. You know, Houston was very good in that first half at pressuring the ball and cutting down on passing options. So in that sense, Houston had a great half, and it was a terrible half for the Red Bulls. So you know, these things are all relative.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We had Toronto here at San Jose last weekend, and two of the players that they got for Dwayne De Rosario and Tony Chani and Danley Borman actually played very well for Toronto.
Yes, I saw that game.
Yeah, Chani is a good player. I think he's a guy that they're going to miss over the long term. But, you know, speaking of Dwayne De Rosario, you know, is this a case of New York looking for a guy that can take them to the top this season? I know Dwayne's kind of, you know, in the twilight of his career. He's still an effective player, but, you know, they're definitely trading a future guy for a guy who plays now.
Well, excuse me. I mean, I happen to think that the Red Bulls, they are a now team. It's about winning now. You don't go out and get guys like Henry and Marquez and then go out and trade for first. I thought Manny Bellucci would be the answer at number 10. And then now I think he's not. So, yeah, look, I don't think this is any part of any long-term plan here in obtaining De Rosario. You know, he's in the last year of his contract. There are some options. He wants DP type money, but I don't. I think the Red Bulls are going to hold out that DP slot and for the transfer period that's coming up in a couple of months, and then see where they are and what they might need to do. I mean, what they need to do, I just can't conceive. You know, you've got Agudelo up front, you have Luke Rogers up front, Henry. You know, maybe it looks a little injury prone right now. It's with this team, it's hard to tell. You know, they are. What we've come to know of European style soccer teams, they're always on the lookout for the next good player. Always.
You know, it's interesting you bring up the European soccer, and one of the hallmarks I think of Red Bull, especially this season with coach Hans Bacca firmly in control now. You know, he let go a couple of the longtime assistant coaches prior to the season. I know there wasn't a lot of explanation behind that, but has he really just taken control of this franchise at this point? And is it, as you say, really all about winning in that European style?
Well, I think, has he taken control? He's taking control of the team, training the team, and having the team prepared to play its games. You know, the real guy in control is Eric Soler. And again, I think this speaks more to a European style of running a soccer team than an American style where the coach is all. This is clearly not the case here because, you know, Soler is at training every day. He sits on the bench during the games. He's incredibly plugged into what's going on in Europe. He's plucked a couple of nice players seemingly out of nowhere. You know, Joel Impaire and Tanio are two examples. You know, he had some misses on Ibrahim Salou. But you know, these things happen. So I think, to me, it's more totally top-down right now. And, you know, as good a job as Bacca is doing, as well as they get along, he's the coach. And the overall philosophy has changed and is coming straight from the top from Eric Soler. So I think, you know, that's more along the lines to me of a club like Lyon, of a club like Barcelona, where, you know, the club has a philosophy. The players, the coaches, everybody has to fit into that philosophy. Whether they will succeed with Red Bulls, whether they have the patience. Again, you know, that's still an open question right now.
Yeah, definitely. I like seeing some of the MLS clubs coming up with those identities. You know, even if they're bringing over influence from overseas, it's nice to see, you know, Red Bulls have, you know, something we can point at as far as a personality. And one of the things I think that goes along with that personality, of course, is Red Bull Arena, you know, which to me, it just as it looks like a fantastic stadium. And I haven't had a chance to get out there yet. But, you know, this is year two for that stadium. You know, how do things look out there? It always looks great on TV. Or are the fans happy? Has it really helped increase attendance and the overall awareness for the team?
Well, I think it's done all those things to a degree. Last week against Houston, there was an announced 15,000. I don't know if all the season ticket holders used their tickets. You know, but it's a premier location for a game. It's you know, when you're there, you know you're at a soccer game. You know you're at a soccer stadium. There's no confusion about what's going on. There's no lines anywhere. You know, unfortunately, it's in sort of an area that has been downtrodden for a long time, and it needs a lot of work in the environs right immediately around the stadium to really make it what would be a great experience. I mean, right now you can take the train from Manhattan to the game, which is incredible, and it's ironic that it's in a lot of ways it's easy to get to from Manhattan by train than it is driving from North Jersey. The highway access is pretty bad. The parking is limited. But I mean, taking all those things into consideration, I don't think anybody would ever conceive of going back to Giant Stadium.
No, maybe not even for an exhibition.
Or a place like it. You know, look, I mean, I know San Jose is just started work on their stadium. Kansas City is going to come online this year. You know, nobody really knows what's going to happen with D.C. or New England. But, you know, the era of these stadiums is clearly it's here. And it's wonderful for the league. And you know, as you guys know now with the All-Star game coming to Red Bull Arena with Manchester United in July, you know, that is going to be the toughest ticket of the summer, I think, in New York. You know, the Red Bulls have 8,000 full-season ticket holders who can buy double the amount of tickets. They have various other season ticket holders with other plans. So when you get down to it, maybe there's going to be, you know, 5,000 to 7,000 tickets available. Some will go to sponsors, to the teams. It's going to be very, very few tickets are going to be available for public sale.
You know, I think it's a fantastic announcement. When they said it was going to be at Red Bull Arena and not at the new Meadowlands, I thought that was a very, I don't want to say ballsy move by MLS, but I think the right move. It's showing that, you know, the soccer stadiums are the future and what we want to see come out of the league. Incidentally, I've also been hitting up all my New York Red Bull season ticket holder friends, too. I know that is going to be a tough ticket to get.
It is going to be a tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, Jack, and it's just to break in for just a second, I think it's not a mistake at all to suddenly have that be a hot ticket. You know, any sort of MLS event in New York for so many years has been, there's really been no demand pressure, because when they were playing at the Meadowlands, obviously they never came anywhere near selling that out. Right. And, you know, so here's an MLS event, and suddenly it's going to be a hot ticket, and I think that can really only help the club in the long term.
There's no question, and it's as Don Garber said at the news conference. You know, look, it's a reward to the Red Bulls for persevering in getting this stadium built, and for doing what they've done to try and keep the game relevant in this area.
Absolutely.
So Jack, I wanted to, you know, turn my attention back to the field just for, you know, one more question about Juan Agudelo. You know, here's a player who really came to prominence in that playoff series last year. You know, he looked fantastic against the Earthquakes, had people buzzing, and then from then went off to South Africa with the U.S. men's national team and has really kind of, you know, cemented himself in the conversation at this point as to forwards to the future. And Jay and I were talking about this earlier this morning. You know, this is a guy that, you know, everyone's complaining about, oh, don't give him too much attention, don't wear him down. I don't actually think that's the case, but, you know, what are people in the New York area, soccer-wise, you know, thinking about this kid and what he can do? And also, you know, in conjunction with Tim Ream, how is the system and the tactics and the coaching at New York Red Bulls helping these guys in their development to maybe becoming, you know, quality international players?
Well, I think the day-to-day exposure to players like Marquez and Henri and Lynn Pear and Roy Miller and, you know, all these guys, it makes a difference, because without even realizing, you really soak up a lot of their knowledge, the way they conduct themselves on and off the field. So I think for guys, for all young players, it's key. It's you know, it's going to school on a subject matter that you might not have such a sophisticated exposure to. So I think it's very, very valuable. Now with Agudelo, you know, I think this whole sort of minimizing the hype, it comes from the national team program and from the principals in the national team who have, you know, Tim Howard had a good quote after the Argentina game, which was to the effect, you know, he was asked about Agudelo and he said, well, you know, look, the kid looks great. He seems to have a good head on his shoulders, but I've seen a half a dozen Juans in my time with the national team. And I think, you know, that's a point well taken, that we here in the United States were so hungry for, I'm not going to say a savior, but for an elite player to wear our colors for a long time, that we're, you know, anybody who comes along, we're latching onto the guy and we're anointing him as the savior of American soccer, which is really too much for any one person to bear, I think, at this point, because, you know, it's probably not true, and it's way too much pressure. And, you know, it goes back to Landon Donovan and Jose Altidore and you know, Michael Bradley, you name it. But I think for me, with Agudelo and you know, when you look at it, also a guy like Timmy Chandler, what really stands out is that, you know, these guys basically learned their soccer somewhere else. And they are Americans now by, you know, Timmy Chandler by accident of birth, Agudelo just by accident of where his family decided to move. So, you know, we need to keep that in mind. But that said, I think Juan Agudelo is the best thing I've seen in Americans in a U.S. soccer uniform for a long, long time. And, you know, it speaks to U.S. development. It speaks to Red Bull Academy, which is quietly becoming a force in this area in a big, big way. I mean, their teams from U13 on up have been doing very, very well in this area. And as you know, Agudelo is one of their academy players. So I think it bodes well.
Yeah, that is actually wonderful news and a great development that this is a guy who the Red Bulls have developed to a large degree from within. And I think that's something that is really only going to pay additional benefits as we see other MLS clubs really ramping up their academies and starting to implement a philosophy from the top down. And, you know, the more ex-pros you have involved in training these young players and things like that, I think that's really going to aid the national team program in coming years.
No question. Definitely.
Well, you know, another sort of big picture issue is, well, we recently saw the 15th anniversary of the first MLS match, which was out here in San Jose. I'm curious, you know, when you look at the league now and where things are, is it ahead of where you thought it would be in 15 years? You know, we've seen some ups and downs. We've seen a rough stretch where Phil Anschutz basically kept the league afloat on his own, and I think he still probably, you know, is supplementing things financially in some ways. But, you know, if you look at sort of the health of MLS and American soccer overall, where do you see things?
Well, I think the league is clearly on the up in a lot of ways. You know, did I have any expectations? You know, after being around the game for so long, Jay, I tried to keep it all in perspective, and you know, I think everybody's in a rush. I think the fans are in a rush. I think people who are into the game are in a rush for it to, you know, for it to go viral in the United States in a huge way. And I just think that it's still going to take a lot of time. You know, the league is not making a lot, teams are not making a lot of money. I think, as we might have talked about before, Soccer United Marketing has kept the league afloat in a big way over the last, you know, five to eight years. That's very important. But I think what we're seeing now is the development of a nascent fan culture in a lot of places, particularly in the expansion cities. You know, when you look in Toronto and Vancouver, even Real Salt Lake, Seattle, Portland, San Jose to an extent, even Red Bulls, you know, you get this bubbling up of real fan support and fan following, which hasn't been around. And I think part of that is atmosphere. And part of that is a better quality on the field. You know, all of this stuff is goes together, and I don't think it's one specific thing that the league has done. Clearly, designated players are part of it. I think allowing teams to retain now all of their academy players is a huge part of it. I think you look at Real Salt Lake in the Champions League, you know, not to say that all of a sudden the light went on and this became an important thing to the league. But I think that over the past couple of years, the league was really tired of taking it in the neck each year of people looking at them and saying, you know, the Red Bulls can't even get past W Connection of Trinidad and Tobago. How can we take you guys seriously? So, you know, all of these things go into the pot and get mixed together. And I think what comes out in the end is a very positive future for the league, you know, demographically, certainly with the growth of the Hispanic population in the United States, just the number of people that follow the game, whether it's, you know, EPL on the weekend or what have you, you know, guys, it's all soccer. And to me, that's what matters because, people are soccer fans.
Well, I think that's a pretty good summation of where things are. And I, you know, we touched on stadiums in, New York, but that's, I think, another thing that is contributing to all of this growth. And anyway, it's nice to hear your perspective on that.
Yeah, well, no, go ahead, Jack.
Okay, I'll adjudicate. Rob, do you have a question?
Well, I wanted to follow up on a couple of things you said in there, Jack. You know, number one, sure. The run of Real Salt Lake to the CONCACAF Champions League final. And,
right.
And I think you're seeing across the country, I know this question has been asked in every single MLS city, you know, are you supporters of Real Salt Lake in this tournament? And mm-hmm. I've been really encouraged by how many people are answering yes and absolutely yes to that question. I think it speaks a lot to, like you talk about, that you know, groundswell of fan support that's growing up around the league. You know, they're definitely supporting their teams and the rivalries are strong, but everyone realizes that the strength of the league can only be enhanced by the performance of a team like Salt Lake. And then another thing I wanted to actually kind of have you follow up on is you mentioned how the academy players and them getting to sign with teams and how that's made a big difference in the roster. But one of the things I also think has helped, and this kind of goes to the psyche of the American sports fan to begin with, of wanting to see really good players. I think we've seen a real positive development in the way international players have been brought into this country to play, not just as designated players, but as, you know, real impact players as well. And I think you mentioned Soli as a player you guys have brought in this season. You know, fantastic mm-hmm. example of a player who's not necessarily a designated player, but a guy who can be very impactful on the field. And I wanted to ask you if MLS is now ready for that type of mid-level salary international player that can be effective, and is that going to, you know, hurt or help American players that are also coming up at the same time?
Well, I think this is the eternal debate in this league, and it has been with the Red Bulls this year in particular. Because, you know, you look at their starting lineup and basically they have two Americans on the field. One is Aguadelo, born in Colombia. So is this a huge issue? I don't think it's a huge issue in terms of the number of foreigners as opposed to, you know, North Americans on the field. But I you know, Rob, I agree with you wholeheartedly that for every designated player, you know, you need to hit the ground running with two mid-level players, and those are the tough, to me, those are the tough guys to ferret out and to find, because as you know, the league doesn't want to pay transfer fees. So that's one strike against it right there. So, you know, you need to be knowledgeable enough and plugged in enough to know who's out of contract and who's not, who's available and who's not. And for so long, that's been the purview of player agent. So, you know, you have a case where the agent is going to the team and trying to flog a player to the team, and the team gets to see the guy on trial a few times, and maybe they take the chance. So you know, I think bad decisions are can be really, really deadly in this league. You know, you look what you know, Toronto did with Mister, what Seattle did with the Swiss striker. You know, you take a couple of hits like that, and it could really set you back. You know, a season. So, you know, being frugal and being smart, it's two hard things to put together. You know, some teams have been better doing it than others. And I think a lot of the guys who come in on mid level, you know, you look at a guy like Scalotto and Freddie Montero. You know, they came in at below DP money. They showed what they could do. And you know, now Scalotto went on to DP money, and Montero is on DP money now. So I think, you know, the message from the league has been, the money is here if you prove yourself on the field. That's all well and good, but it seems to have left, in my mind, mostly the guys that get left behind are the North Americans on that.
I'm sure Dwayne D. Rosario would agree with you there.
I have no doubt he would agree, but you know, by the same token, he's the guy that signs the contracts. I mean, nobody forced him to do this.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there were some promises. I don't know. I don't know that for a fact. But yeah, I agree with you. You know, a guy like Di Rosario, who's at the end of his career and is looking for a final payday, you know, this is his last chance, no question.
Yeah, and I agree with you too that he signed the contract. It's kind of like Taylor Twellman, where or Landon Donovan, you know, who re-ups with MLS, and then mm-hmm. 6 months later, there's somebody sniffing around from Europe you know, in Twellman's case, he very clearly wanted to go. Donovan, it was never quite as clear. But, you know, hey, if you sign the contract, you know, sometimes actions have
consequences.
Consequences, that's the word. Thank you.
There you go.
Yeah, and I did want to touch base, too, on this idea that, there's a debate about whether you can bring in mid-level foreign players. I think I was talking with Kelly Gray, actually, a former Earthquakes player, and his observation with regards to DPs is that, well, A, no team with a DP has ever won MLS Cup, and also that the most successful teams he's been on have been the teams where guys gel and they really learn to play well together as a team. And maybe you have a guy who is an identifiable star, but it's not always a requirement. A lot of times, you know, the best teams in MLS, if you look at the Earthquakes in their prime and that team that moved on to Houston, not a lot of big name players there necessarily, but boy, they sure racked up a lot of trophies.
I agree with you that a designated player is no guarantee of anything, but after seeing Henri for a little while here, I think something that I don't think has really been remarked upon all that much is that, you know, you bring in a designated player over here and I think in 8 cases out of 10 they are elite players, used to playing with elite players, and all of a sudden they're an elite player, but the talent around them certainly is not on a par with what they're used to. And you start to see some frustration, you know, guys that are making runs and are used to getting the ball on those runs. Suddenly they don't get the ball. Mm-hmm. Do they stop making runs? Maybe. Do they get frustrated? Probably. So, you know, I think it's more complex than simply saying, well, you know, you got your star, you're paying him $5 million. Why didn't you win? I think that's the easy question. And I think, as we all know, you know, this is an extremely fickle game. And go ask Real Madrid. You know, go ask Inter Milan against Schalke. You know, stuff happens. And you know, by having the best players means you got really good players. It doesn't guarantee that you're going to win. So. Yeah, I think team chemistry is really, really important. You know, to me, a club like Real Salt Lake is really impressive and has been impressive for quite a while now. And you know, they've done it. I'm not sure if Sabo is a DP right now or if Espíndola is a DP, but they're pretty darn close. And you know, they've definitely got a plan in mind. And it works for them, and that's the criteria they're using. In a place like New York, if you want the attention, you tend to need the stars. In a place like LA as well. So I think, you know, to each his own, but, you know, you better make good decisions.
Well, I don't think anybody's going to disagree with you on that. Good decisions are definitely the key to all of this. And
to kind of everything, isn't it? Isn't it, Rob?
Yeah. So, and we'll see how this plays out. I think it's an interesting thing both ways, and you know, whether we'll see a team with a DP win MLS Cup this year or next year, you know, that debate will continue. So, anyway, Rob, are you? Do you have anything to add?
No. I think you guys really summed that up. You know, it is a little bit of, you know, wait and see how effective they are, and. Yeah, just, you know, my final thought on the international players would be, maybe from the fan perspective, you know, they're not always thought of as foreigners so much anymore because of how prominent soccer is through the internet or you know satellite television. You can see these players, you know, before they come to MLS, or maybe you've heard of some of them before they've come to MLS, and so they're not necessarily foreigners now. They're just good soccer players. And I think that also helps you know, fans embrace them and accept them into the sport as not just being interlopers. So I think it's good to see, especially at the mid-level, some of these guys coming in and being effective, and how the fans are, you know, not upset about it. In fact, they're embracing them.
Okay.
Yeah, you know I think fans are all for anything that will improve their team and make it more enjoyable going to the games and to talk about. So I think it's all, you know, the game is being talked about more in this country than it ever has been before, whether it's MLS, Europe, South America, it doesn't really matter. I just think it's great for the game.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, on that note, Jack, I think it's probably time to thank you for spending some time with us today and going over this upcoming weekend's match, and always enjoy reading your stuff both on New York Times and on the Goal blog.
And, hey, thanks.
Yeah, and thank you very much, and we'll look forward to catching up with you again sometime in the future.
Guys, thanks a lot. It's always a pleasure. Anytime.
All right.
The best. All right, bye now.
Thanks. So that was our conversation with Jack Bell, recorded Tuesday morning. And as you said, always good to talk to Jack.
Definitely. Yeah, it's nice to, you know, have him on the line. I think he had some nice stuff in there. All the talk about the international players in MLS, I think it's a fascinating subject. And I think we could have gone on a lot longer on that, you know, given the, you know, their impact in the league and what it really means to upping the quality of play in Major League Soccer.
Yeah, that was interesting, and I think one that a topic that will come up probably again at some point in the future, maybe even in other conversations. So, we'll have to see where all that takes us. Anyway, that is it for the special episode. But we will remind you that there are other podcasts that you can listen to here at Centerline and with our partners this year, the San Jose Earthquakes.
That's right. We'll have our weekly Quakes cast coming up later this week, where Kelly Gray and Joe Nuxall and we get together. And this week we're gonna see if we can get a player on the program. We're not really sure if that's going to happen yet. But we also have Michael Lewis of Big Apple Soccer. He's going to join us on the Quakes cast to break down the game again this weekend. So get a little more insight into that. You know, being New York, it's a big game. So I had to have extra media on for that one. And I think, Jay, you and I will not be doing the Aftershocks podcast. We're going to save that for home games, if I'm correct.
That is correct. The Aftershocks podcast, until we can afford a travel budget, will just be after home games.
That'll be coming up eventually. So check Centerline Soccer for stories leading up to the game. I'll have my weekly training report, and hopefully we'll get some interviews with players and coaches ahead of their travel day to New York, which is Thursday. And, of course, we hope all of you make sure to carve out some time, 4:30 on Saturday afternoon, to watch San Jose Earthquakes take on New York Red Bulls.
Yes, a fabulous playoff rematch, and, should be a good game. Sounding like no Thierry Henry, but we'll let you delve into that on the Quakes cast. So,
yeah, But they do get, we do get to see Dwayne De Rosario, so there you go.
That's right. Dwayne De Rosario. Dwayne. Anyway, I'm getting nostalgic because it wouldn't be appropriate to sing it to him when he's in a Red Bulls jersey. So
I don't think so, yeah. I think that might not go over well with anybody. At least in blue and black.
Exactly. So, anyway, all right. Well, thanks again for listening, and this time we really will sign off. So, I'm Jay Hibbs.
And I'm Robert Jonas.
Thanks for listening.